Welcome to Product Club, a podcast featuring the best product people in the world. I'm your host, Jeff Morris Jr. Most of you know me as JMJ and founder at Chapter One. Let's get started. Adam Grani is the former VP of Product and Marketing at Lambda School, where he was my teammate. Previously, he was the head of growth marketing and innovation at Uber. He's also an improv comedian. We had an amazing conversation.
Adam, it was so great to have you at Product Club today. I've had the pleasure of working with you at Lambda School, and I've known you for a long time, and one of my favorite teammates ever, and so this was so much fun just to spend time with you.
One of the defining parts of your personality is you're an improv comedian. I always loved it working alongside you, and how has that shaped you as a product leader?
Yeah, I think, so there's a lot of really interesting fundamentals of improv that apply incredibly well to like well-functioning teams in general. So, you know, everything from just like, you know, everyone's there to support each other in a good improv group, that, you know, it's all about building on what the last person did rather than, you know, saying no is like a huge faux pas in improv. It's all yes and is like a very common phrase that you'll hear about, which is like, if someone's like, hey, you have a chicken on your head, a bad response would be like, no, I don't. Because it just kind of like stops the flow and the energy of the scene. Like a better response is to say, yes, and his name is like Steve, and he's been my best friend for 20 years. And did you know he's got a daughter who I think you would like here? You know, like just continuing on and building on the scene. So there's lots more. For me personally, I think that like one of the big things for me was I've always like... My brain just never stops. Like I'm just like constantly ideating and thinking about things. And for a good chunk of like my early career, I get frustrated because like I wouldn't necessarily like share what I had going on in my brain. And then I would actually get frustrated like down the line when the thing I had in my brain could have helped, right? Whether that was like an idea that like came to fruition way longer, like a year later. I'm like, man, I had this idea a year ago. Like we've wasted a lot of time not, you know, going off of it or like challenging something that I didn't think was the best idea or things like that. And like through just like reflection of like that frustration, I was like, well, this is like opposite of what I do in improv. Like if I have an idea, I get it out there and I trust that the people around me are going to want to build off of that and like, and run with it. And so I just started doing that. And I, like, I probably apologize more than I need to for it. But like, I tell people like, look, like I'm going to throw ideas out because I think they're good for the world. And I hope we build on them and like, can run with them. And it doesn't mean that we have to build every idea that I come up with or like follow every path that I maybe present. But it's, you know, just making sure that it's out there in case it sparks something for someone else. So for improv, for me, is the thing that like it both gives me that comfortable, like it's okay to throw an idea out there and the comfortable, like, but it may not go the path that I think it's going to go. Right. Because like if you another like bad form when it comes to improv is to force an idea, like to force a joke. So if it's just like, you know, if there is a scene that is someone's birthday and you start singing happy birthday and someone else like comes in with the second verse, but they like change the lyrics. You don't do what you like. And maybe you already in your mind had like a joke for like the end of the happy birthday song. Like mm-hmm. You don't try to fight to get it back on the path that you wanted. You actually see where this new path goes and like you let it happen more organically. And so I think similarly, like with my ideas, I rarely am so like, I don't find it personal when people think they're bad or when like they never materialize or things like that. I actually think that it's like, oh, this is cool. Like I see things even still today, like at Uber or at Lambda School or places like that, that like materialize. I'm like, oh, I know the people that launched that. And like, it's a totally different path than I was going to go with it. But like, I can still see like flavors of like how I made sure that conversation at least happened. And that to me is like more personal fulfilling than like my idea winning.
One part that maybe is from your improv background, but notice that you kept on telling teams today just the importance of telling real personal stories and kind of telling the story of your product through the impact it has on your customers' lives. And there was an example about, you know, the email someone receives when they start to earn real money on Medify, or more public facing messages around, you know, just like larger stories that aren't so rooted in like the functionality of your product, just larger narratives. Can you talk about that? And do you think that's related to kind of your improv background, or is that just something you've realized over time?
I think that like figuring out that story and like coming up with the types of places it could go is related to improv, because like I want to think about what all those scenarios could be. Like going back to the examples I was just talking about, it's like even like I go in open-minded that it may not go the path that I want it to, but I also try to think about all the paths it could go. That way, if it does, I'm like ready for it. And so I think the, like in a lot of the conversations we had today, like I came up with examples like relatively off the fly. I hadn't thought about those before. Like that, I think, comes from my improv skill. The actual path of like really thinking about the customer story is something that I've known, like as a marketer, like that's pretty important, right? Like most of what we do as marketers, like is rooted in like, what does the customer actually need and that kind of stuff. But I think I refined my thoughts on that at Lambda School, because mm-hmm. that's like so much of what has helped Lambda grow, and that like Austin does a really amazing job of like amplifying, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought about it in like through the process of like when we were thinking about and putting together like comms at the company, like there is this balance of like how much do we want to edit Austin or like recommend that he edits versus like should we lean into it in different ways. And I was like a big believer of like, well, it got us here and it's genuine for him, like we shouldn't necessarily shut it off, like we should give advice and round it out. But like what I really dove into is just like, okay, the thing that people are connecting with isn't his points of view on like venture capital, right? It's when he celebrates these student stories and he literally just copies and pastes things that they send him. And it's just like blows my mind every time I read one of those stories. And so then I like connected that back to Uber. And, you know, one of the things we always struggled with was on the driver side of our business, we had those stories, right? Like constantly meeting drivers that were like, oh my God, you changed my life. Like you have, you know, allowed me to start my own business, or you helped me send my child to the, you know, the special needs school they needed to go to, or things that would just constantly warm or break your heart, that you're like, man, we're doing this. But that was never our mission. Like our mission, our focus of the business was trip efficiency, right? Yeah. Like, and was the scale transportation. And so I think that's like, it was always frustrating on marketing to be like, we have these stories, why don't they connect? And that for me was like, once I saw them connecting at Lambda School, I was like, oh, well, the difference here is that like, we really are trying to unlock more of these stories. Where at Uber, it was like, we happen to be unlocking these stories, but it's actually not because it was our goal. And so telling those stories comes across a little ingenuous when our goal is actually only to maximize earnings up until a point of efficiency, right? It's different. And so I just spent a lot of time thinking about like, what were the ingredients at Lambda School that were different than a place like Uber or Hotel Tonight or other places that like made that feel so much more valuable and genuine. And so I think that like helping people connect that story to what they're actually doing, I think is one way to start to fill that gap and make sure they are like, it doesn't come across as marketing, mm-hmm. even though it will still to a degree, but it's, you know, and hopefully it comes across over time is like, oh, we're actually genuinely like changing lives.
So the theme of today and the title of this episode will be Reality Distortion Field, which was the exercise we put our teams through. And do you want to just explain that concept? And I'd heard about it before, kind of the Steve Jobs quotes. But when I worked with the Lambda School, I actually saw it in practice several times. And so do you want to explain to people what that is and kind of how you think about that?
Yeah, so the essence of Reality Distortion Field is, you know, as a leader, believing so deeply that you're going to change something that like everybody else around you believes that it's not only possible, but it's inevitable, right? That you're not just a storyteller, but you're actually someone that sees the future and they want to get there for you and like, and with you. And by nature, it helps you focus and maximize the work that everybody puts in because they believe in this thing, right? It's not just a job. It's like you're changing the world. You're distorting reality. I guess that's how I think about it.
Where did you see that being done at Uber as an example? Obviously, you guys changed reality, like it actually happened, but were there elements of that in terms of how you guys set goals or, and did you, was that the point in your career where you really saw the impact of this framework?
Yeah. So I think at the macro level, like Travis pretty regularly would talk about this like dream of standing on like high up on like a skyscraper looking down and like there, he would use a picture in like slides and stuff like that of like, you know, a top down view of New York City. And what you see is like 30% taxi cabs and a bunch of other cars. And he's like, I want to see, like, I imagine this future where I look down and it's actually all Ubers and there's like half as many cars.
Mm-hmm.
And like that story starts with this sense of like, oh, it actually tells me so much about what we're trying to solve. But it also starts to connect like what we're doing today to like make that a reality. And it just, again, like as an employee there, hearing that and then looking at what we're working on was just like, yeah, that's possible, right? Like we're going to be able to like replace every car in the world, right? So like, you know, when you look at like when people even talk about it now as a public company, there's still part of me is just like, oh yeah, but we're still only at like 1% car penetration. Like, the upside of this is ridiculous. It's different people driving that vision and everything now, but it's still, you know, there's still a lot of room for growth. The like micro version of that was he was also really good about pinpointing a prioritization. And so like we as a growth organization would meet with Travis every Friday. And so every Thursday night, we'd be up till like 4 a.m, just getting together. You had to show that you're already working on the solution when you identify a problem. Like, there's no like, hey, we identified the problem. Like, that just would never be a good productive conversation with Travis. And so if you're able to say like, hey, last night we identified this problem. So we stayed up for 3 hours. We already put in motion like how we're going to solve it. If we were to say something like, we'll get back to you next week on how it's doing. Like he would say, how about today? And they're like, what? And like, it became this like running joke of like Travis being like, yeah, we're going to do that today. Like not next week. We're going to do it today. I need to know how it's improving later today. And like, there was just a sense of like, first it's like, oh crap. Like I just worked all night on this. Like, do I really want to work? It's Friday. Like, does that mean I have to like work on it all weekend and things like that? Which sometimes the answer was yes. And we could debate the value of that all day long. But like more than that, every single time force us to say like, oh, he made it hyper clear that this is vital to our business and that like it shouldn't take a week to see that we've made progress.
Mm-hmm.
We thought it would take a week because we think that's when we'll see comfortable progress. But like he just told us he needs to see progress today and we need to figure out what that means. And like, let's go do it. And like oftentimes we'd be like, hey, we did this work. And we still will have an update for you next week. But like, here's the update we're going to have for you on Monday and the one on Tuesday and Wednesday. And that way we can like jam more on it on Friday because we've already had a week's worth of like back and forth with you on this just through like email or messages or whatnot. So I think that's like I saw pieces of it elsewhere, but that was the first time I just like lived and breathed. It was someone that like that I think was a huge strength of Travis's. I also think one of the challenges Travis had is similar to what I've read about Steve Jobs, which is like, you know, connecting that to reality sometimes, like for a lot of people that are in functional roles, if you don't connect that to reality, what that means is like, there's a lot of collateral damage that can happen with things like that. Where like, you know, for my team, for instance, we're marketers that were servicing 500 different cities. And so like we could go prioritize what Travis just asked for, but then we also have to go manage 500 GM's expectations. And that's a lot of work that like Travis just didn't think about, right? And like that's not necessarily his job to do it, but like the world that he operated in is like that noise isn't even there and it doesn't matter. But the world that like our individuals operated one is like, oh no, it's there. And we will hear it until the end of life. that it's there and it's important to these people and things like that. And so like, I think people that can have both that vision and that ability to like bend reality, but then connect it to actual reality today to make sure that like, it's still a healthy environment for everybody is something that for some of the people that are best at that struggle at that second piece.
I love the moment you shared today when you interviewed with Travis and you asked him, are we going to do food delivery? And then he gave kind of a metaphor of a tree. What was kind of that moment like? And what was the kind of the response that you got when you, I just imagine you asking that question, just having kind of like a 20-year answer for what the future might hold.
Yeah, I think coming from Hotel Tonight to Uber, like one of my expectations was like, Hotel Tonight has what feels like a more narrow view on what's possible than the little bit of time I'd at that point spent with Uber people. Like we didn't have as much of that reality distortion that like the energy inside the company that felt like you were going to change the world, right? Mm-hmm. It was, hey, we made a really awesome app that we're proud of and we're going to go make sure it grows, right? Which is good. That a lot of like Hotel Tonight is very successful with that. But it was just this different energy. And so what I expected when I asked that question was for a plan, right? Was like, oh, tell me about like, I feel this energy around all the people I've met that you guys are going to change the world. Tell me how you're going to do it. I really want to be part of that plan. And like, there was no plan, right? Like there was, but it was more of the, hey, like, so the metaphor very quickly is like, you know, all I know right now is that like, we have a core product that I think of as like the base of a tree, and I'm going to make it and make sure. And that function is getting one person from one place to another really efficiently. And so I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that we do that so well that we can eventually start exploring different branches that could come off of that, which now looking back, you think of as like, okay, so things like Eats and Freight and another 500 experiments that never saw the light of day were all just branches off of this core thing that you didn't need to go plant another tree. And simultaneously, things like the investment in autonomy was, we need to make sure we keep our trunk as strong as possible, right? That we are the leader in that thing that we said we were going to do, like that was the original core product. Yeah, I can't remember if I actually answered your original question.
That's great. So I like to spend a quick minute just, I'll kind of fire off some gems from the conversation. And maybe you can give just like a quick anecdote or kind of life reference that explains where you kind of, where this idea came from. So the first one was, you said, I want to know how stupid I am about everything.
So someone in my life at some point kind of explained to me the concept of like a T-shaped career, you know, which is basically like having something that over time you become an expert at. But like when you become and shifted like management and or running different groups of things, like you're going to always have that thing you were really good at. But now you also have to have a whole bunch of things that you're okay at. Like you don't have to necessarily be an expert at them all, but you need to understand them. And so the example I use all the time is public relations, right? I've been in marketing my whole life and advertising. So I've always been like in the team or in the reach of everything going on in PR. So like, I kind of always thought I knew a lot about PR. And then like one of the first times I had to like really dive into PR was at Hotel Tonight with our PR person, because we had a very small team there and like I wanted to help her out. And then like I very quickly realized how stupid I am when it comes to like PR. And like I'm not I have some writing skills, but they're not like PR writing skills in the least bit, right? And it was just like I had this just like appreciation for like, oh man, I don't know what's going on here. And my like, so over time, like I was like, great, I want to know more about PR, not because I ever should be the person to do it, but because I want to be the person that like can build a huge successful organization someday, or a successful organization. It doesn't have to be huge, but, and I don't think I will do PR right if I don't understand it. And then over time that just became like, I just need to understand what I don't understand so that I, and like how to fill that gap when I do have it, that I can like build around me in a way that enables me to be really effective. And so now like fast forward to Lambda School, I was like, I'm going to build our PR team. And I was like, I should just run this because I think it fits in the nature of the business I'm doing more than any of the other executives on the team right now. So I'll go ahead and make it happen. And it wasn't, I'm going to do it. It wasn't, I'm going to go hire an agency. It wasn't, I'm going to hire a VP of PR. It was, oh, I actually happen to know a bunch of people I can go lean on that I can get a couple things done right now, right? I can actually connect the dots on a couple things, but I'm going to need someone to own this on a daily basis very soon. And I have an agency that I've worked with that I trust that I can lean on to allow us to move really fast, really quickly. And I think because I spent the time earlier in my career to understand what I don't know there, like it allowed me to actually put together, like we went from having no PR coverage at all to actually having like a very decent quality PR organization within like a couple of weeks. That started opening up, not just people responding to like Austin on Twitter and doing things to, oh, we're actually like interviewing with like top press on a regular basis. And we have a strategy on how we're doing it. And we're going to stop talking about nursing and we're like that, things like that. Right. And so that to me is like one example of where I've been like, okay, for things that I want to influence at certain points in my career, I want to make sure I go in and start to understand what I don't know. So at that point, you know, earlier when I was like very marketing minded, it was, oh, I need to understand brand. I need to understand design. I need to understand like marketing design. I need to understand analytics. I need to understand PR. Like I still have my superpower of like hardcore performance growth marketing stuff, but I need to know those things because if I want to run a great marketing org, I need to be able to like speak to or bring in the resources I need. Then like when it became growth, it became product and some technical aspects of things, UX design, stuff like that. And then now that I'm more like, oh, I actually want to run whole businesses or build a company or things like that. It's, oh, I actually want to understand more about like actual technical skills or finance or research or things like that. And so my goal again isn't to go master all of those. It's just like, hey, I need to be able to wrap my head around it so I can like recruit the right people, so I can like speak to it well enough, and I can make sure we're making decisions that don't ignore it altogether because I think I know everything about it.
One more line I love, and we can close with this, but is the line, something doesn't feel impossible if you don't know it's impossible.
Yeah, so that was purely coming from my research on reality distortion. So when you ask me, it's one of the big things that I'm in the process of doing right now is like codifying what I think I do well. And like this. So like this is something that you're not the first person to say, hey, you really brought this into my life in a way that maybe it hadn't been there before. How did you do it? And I'm like, I have no clue. I just do it. And like, so I want to create content and do stuff like that. And so actually you putting the words reality, because I've always said like, oh, can we just bend reality for a second? Which yep. In it, you know, it's obviously been using some of the similar phrases, but I hadn't connected that back to the history of reality distortion. And so reading about it, just catching up with it, so I can at least, again, speak to how other people have used this skill set and like how I can think about codifying it. There's this woman, I just searched her. It's Debbie from Apple. She's like one of the early Apple people that was like really influential. And like her quote was, you did the impossible because you didn't realize it wasn't possible. Yeah. And I just thought that was it was one of those that I just captured right away. Cause I'm like, oh, that's so valuable. I think we spend so much time thinking about, well, what can't we do? Like, or why can't we do things rather than the other way around, which is we even framed the prompt for this, right? Was, you know, your original question was like, oh, maybe we can say like, what are the barriers in front of you? And this quote is actually what made me drive to think about, let's not start there. Let's actually start from like what would we love to see? Like what is the world that we want to create? And then work backwards from that, because we never actually say to ourselves, we can't do that anymore. We actually say like, well, what do we need to do to accomplish that? And I think that's just a healthier, more fun way of approaching challenges.
Adam, thank you so much for today. It was amazing. On a personal level, it's just really fun to spend time with you. And I hope we can do it many more times. This was awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Anytime, hit me up.
Thanks, Adam.